there. Dan Dillman bringing you a little of this, a little of that. Today's show, we're going to look at NAFTA, the federal government's climate science report, and hopefully, if there's time, we're going to talk about some asteroids and the people who are hunting for them. Let's look at our first topic, NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. Talks this summer have now ended, and negotiators for the U.S., Canada, and Mexico have wrapped up their first round of talks and discussions. Any trade pact is contentious, but the road to a new North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, could be particularly rocky. Still, both Mexico and the United States hope to reach a deal by the end of this year. Let's look at some questions and some answers about NAFTA. First of all, has NAFTA been good for the U.S. economy? Economists generally say yes. Economic theory and centuries of experience suggest that trade helps national economies become more efficient by letting nations make what they produce best while buying the products and goods, such as goods and services, that their trading partners can make more cheaply. The benefits of deals like NAFTA that boost trade tend to show up as better or cheaper goods in stores, rising productivity per worker, and new export opportunities. Well, if it's good, why do so many people oppose it at the present time? Because trade also creates losers by exposing industries and workers to more competition. Under NAFTA, the U.S. has lost more jobs to imports, 203,000 a year, than it has gained from exports, 188,000. True, the net effect is small. Only 15,000 lost jobs a year. That's less than a tenth of the new jobs the U.S. creates on the average every month. But that's small comfort to blue-collar workers who have been thrown out of work by import competition. Well, in addition to some blue-collar workers, who in the U.S. is opposed to NAFTA? There are at least two camps. On the right, some disagree with mainstream conservatives about the benefits of trade, pointing to U.S. trade deficits. Each $1 billion of exports creates 6,300 jobs. So closing last year's $63 billion deficit with Mexico would mean a nearly 400,000 new jobs, mostly in manufacturing, according to this kind of thinking. The U.S. actually ran an $8 billion surplus with Canada. By taking a tougher negotiating stance, the current administration believes it will create more U.S. jobs. The political left shares the president's dislike for NAFTA, but for different reasons. In its view, corporate interests in all three nations dominated the original talks, making sure the benefits of trade flowed to business owners rather than to the workers. The result was greater inequality in all three societies. While trade may have intensified these trends, many economists point to other forces, such as automation and tax policy, as playing a bigger role in the growing chasm between the haves and the have-nots. Well, can a new NAFTA reduce the U.S. trade deficit with Mexico? Not easily. A trade pact sets the rules for exports and imports and leaves the private sector to exploit the benefits. But it doesn't guarantee that exports and imports will be in balance. Relying on governments instead of markets to manage those balances is not a conservative thing to do, although President Ronald Reagan did negotiate managed trade deals. Well, can a new NAFTA reduce inequality? Most people say only at the margins. The AFL-CIO has offered 6 recommendations to make NAFTA more worker-friendly. Among other things, the labor group wants to change the rules of origin so that a higher percentage of a product has to be made in NAFTA countries to avoid duties or tariffs, a goal the current administration shares. Automakers, by contrast, want that percentage to remain at 62%. To really reduce inequality, the U.S. would have to strengthen unions' bargaining power, offer much greater assistance to workers who lose their jobs to trade, and invest in economic development in Mexico to help reduce the wage gap between Mexican and U.S. workers. If you want to read more about this, look at the September 4th issue, Christian Science Monitor. But for now, I'm going to let you dance with the wolves for a few minutes. Now we're going to look at a federal draft report which puts climate science in perspective. When the final draft of the federal climate science special report was made in August, it drew attention largely because of fears that the administration might try to suppress it. But the report, a key section of and scientific foundation for the larger federally mandated 4th National Climate Assessment, due next year, is also an insightful synthesis of the best climate-related scientific research. We have here a 673-page report that covers not just expected predictions and observations about temperature trends and sea level rise, but also emerging cutting-edge research, some of which is debatable, about global warming and its effect on extreme weather and the interconnected systems that affect our climate and our weather patterns. It highlights uncertainties as well as the areas of greatest consensus among scientists. 4 features of this report are the following. First of all, relative to the year 2000, global mean sea level is projected to rise between 0.5 and 1.2 feet by 2050, and tidal flooding will continue to increase in depth and in frequency. At the same time, research is emerging about how relative sea level rise will vary along U.S. coastlines, likely to be greater than the global average in the Northeast and the western Gulf of Mexico but less than the global average in much of the Pacific Northwest and Alaska. If Antarctic ice sheets melt, U.S. coastlines could see sea rise even higher than elsewhere in the world. Also, the Arctic is warming about twice as fast as the global average. And if that rate continues, Septembers are expected to be nearly ice-free in the Arctic Ocean sometime between now and the 2040s. And how changes in the Arctic weather will influence U.S. weather is an open question, but there is the potential for significant impact. Moreover, how human-caused warming has contributed to weather events or even to temperature shifts varies significantly. The report cites a medium degree of confidence, for instance, linking human factors to rising temperatures in parts of the West and northern United States, but it did not find a link in the Southeast, where temperatures have not been rising as much. It cites high confidence that the frequency and the intensity of extreme heat and heavy precipitation events are increasing in most of the world, but it says there is no consensus on the relative magnitude of human and natural influences on past changes in hurricane activity. Moreover, since the previous national climate assessment, there have been major advances, with emerging research into the link between extreme weather and climate change, changes in atmospheric circulation, oceanic acidification, and oxygen loss, and the potential for tipping points that could rapidly shift the climate system. These, among other areas. And finally, the report's authors refrain from making policy recommendations. This report covers the entire gamut of the science that we need to know to make decisions about our future. Now, this is an article also in the September 4th edition of the Christian Science Monitor. But something in addition that you might like to look at is on page 21, where there is a column devoted to science at home, pointing out that science isn't just for scientists. The Monitor's science team suggests inexpensive experiments to try at home and no Bunsen burner required. A brief break, as we have 2001. asteroids fly by, did you, during that spatial music? Well, the Earth's planetary defenders at the moment are scanning the sky for space rocks, which are coming close to Earth. In other words, asteroid hunters are prepping now for flybys. Dark, leisurely, rotating, and traveling at about 30,000 miles per hour. Asteroid 2012 TC4 was set to arrive around October 4th, rendezvous with the Earth. But the 65-foot-wide space rock won't hit us. Astronomers calculate it will zip by and miss us by 27,000 miles, one-eighth the distance to the moon. But the encounter highlights the threat that meteors pose, as well as astronomers' urgent yet painstaking work to identify, to track, and to potentially deflect incoming space rocks. Remember, things do hit other things, and we're not special in that regard. Just look up in the night sky and you can see things burning up in the atmosphere. Those are grains of sand, something the size of a car hits every few years. Astronomers have spotted most of the big ones, and at the direction of Congress, NASA launched a program in 1998 which focused on finding 90% of all near-Earth objects. In other words, NEOs, near-Earth objects, that were larger than 1 kilometer, or 0.6 mile wide. The asteroid that wiped out dinosaurs 65 million years ago measured about 10 kilometers wide. But any impactor larger than 1 kilometer could trigger catastrophic climate change. About 95% of those largest asteroids are known. But in 2005, Congress directed NASA to expand its cataloging efforts to include NEOs larger than 140 meters, or about 450 feet wide. Scientists believe they have detected about a third of those so far. An impactor this size could cause local damage on land, and worse, if it struck the ocean, it would trigger a tsunami. Impacts of large asteroids are extremely rare and therefore highly unlikely. The odds of an asteroid 1 kilometer wide hitting the Earth in any given year are about 1 in 500,000. And even an object 140 meters wide has just a 1 in 30,000 chance. But the larger the asteroid, the less the chance of impact. Asteroids do hit Earth frequently, but they're small ones. About once a year, an asteroid 3 meters wide will strike our atmosphere, and it causes a spectacular fireball. Some particularly metallic rocks might make it to the ground, but they rarely cause damage. But larger asteroids do pose a risk. If you think back to 2013, then the Chelyabinsk meteor injured nearly 1,500 people in the Russian city of Chelyabinsk in the central part of Russia. And it was about the size of 2012 TC4. It had gone undetected before it slammed into the Earth's atmosphere, and it triggered a window-shattering shockwave. What scientists need most to protect humanity from impact is time. The sooner astronomers find asteroids headed toward Earth, the better. If the dinosaurs had had a space program, they could have protected themselves, given enough warning. Scientists are already working on ways to deflect potential impactors. A joint project between NASA and the European Space Agency, called the Asteroid Impact and Deflection Assessment Mission, seeks to crash an unmanned spacecraft into the smaller body of a binary asteroid system in an effort to alter its course. For now, astronomers are focused on finding as many asteroids as possible. And for this, you'd have to look at the October 9th issue, the Christian Science Monitor, because it has a full page plus a really nice diagram of the path of the asteroid 2012 TC4 from above and from the side. Seems like we should go to the Grand Canyon for a few minutes. Be back soon. Of course, the Grand Canyon is out west, and it's the west that I want to talk about now for just a few minutes, because U.S. forests seem to be moving west. Climate change may cause them to move toward moisture. In the 1800s, American settlers from the east moved westward to find open land, and for many it meant new opportunities and a chance to make their fortunes. Now, a different kind of westward migration is underway. Eastern U.S. forests have been showing surprising signs of shifting westward over the past few decades. A recent study analyzed the movement of 86 tree species found across the eastern United States. A shift northward was expected as an effect of climate change. As temperatures rise, many organisms seek cooler territories, but the trees' move westward was unexpected and harder to explain. Climate change could still be partially responsible, but shifting rain patterns from climate change show that the West is becoming wetter, while the East is becoming drier. And we're going out then with La Mer. going to take you to the ocean, let you look at that for a moment or two. And that's all for today's program. I really appreciate you tuning in. I enjoy having your company. And next time, we'll try to bring you some more of a little of this and a little of that. I wonder what it'll be.